south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, still out in the boonies for another week or so. Not using my usual mic either. I'm using my portable one now. It's pretty good, but not quite ready for prime time, but good enough for government work. Wait a minute. That's an oxymoron, right? Government work? Anyway, should be back in the saddle again by next week, doing two shows a week as usual. But, you know, being on the road for about a month now, got some really good expat stories. Might as well start out today with one. Been hanging around with a U.S. doctor who's looking for a plan B in Latin America. He's a trauma specialist and pediatrician. And, you know, he's given me reason 2,476 through 79. Why, you just got to get the hell out of Dodge. That's what he's doing. He's only about 50 years old, and he said he's given up his practice. He's looking through Latin America to find his perfect plan B, though his wife isn't really 100% on board. Man, is he. He says it's just too crazy out there in first world doctoring land. The COVID lockdown, useless mask thing, and fake jab stuff were hell enough for him, he said. With all that, there's another, even more serious issue that won't go away. Few are talking about it, and even though it can be fixed, it never will be. He was talking about how in 2010, prior to every little teenage girl and guy having an iPhone, he'd see maybe two little girls a month in his office who'd cut themselves with razor blades. Now he says he sees six little teenage girls a day with self-mutilating razor cuts. And he's firmly convinced that it has everything to do with Instagram and TikTok, where all these troubled little teenage girls can find themselves and compare their little tragedies and traumas with a million others who also think they don't fit in, but, you know, when you're that age, you never think you fit in. Anyway, he said he has his own 14-year-old daughter who whined and cried and rebelled when he would not let her have a smartphone. But then he said during COVID, kids had to have smartphones to do their online studies during the lockdown, those Zoom courses and all that. So he lost that battle. And he said taking away their iPhone causes other kinds of social problems within their peer groups, because if you don't have one, you get picked on, ostracized, made fun of, and bullied. These days, little girls without an iPhone are so far out on the fringe they can't make friends. That means there are practically no junior high kids out there who don't have them. Even before the COVID crap, when there were no classroom Zoom calls. Now, the doc says he doesn't see the same thing with little teenage boys. So are little American teenage boys more well-adjusted? Well, maybe not. They just have different interests. They're just not into, or very few of them are into, self-mutilation. Because they're not continuously comparing themselves and their body images against perfect specimens on the internet. Instead, he said they're addicted to other things, mostly gaming, which does not lend itself to lowered autoesteem and poor self-image. Though addictive gaming does have negative secondary effects too. Imagine sitting for hours in front of your screen or a phone, in the same position for hours, totally inactive except for the hand and wrist movements. Kids are supposed to be playing, going outside, interacting, riding bikes, exploring, roughhousing, etc. Gaming is a total and modern departure from all that. Though it doesn't make kids auto-abusive and suicidal, it's the kind of competition every little kid can get into and sometimes win. And it's got nothing to do with body image or competition for body image. And young girls, well, they're not into gaming. Not in an obsessive big way like some boys are. So they end up on social media comparing themselves with perfect, filtered, photoshopped images they could never hope to stack up to. But now with social media, they could find like-minded, equally depressed and maladjusted friends and influencers who will egg them on with the body mutilation stuff. It's a scary thing, and parents and doctors don't know what to do about it. Well, I take that back. They do know what to do about it. Take those smartphones away. But it's a cultural sickness and addiction that can't be cured. You take their phones and social media away, they get even more panicked and depressed. By the way, this American doc has been coming down to Latin America every year for 10 years now, in one of those programs similar to Doctors Without Borders. That's one of the reasons he's fallen in love with Latin America. Not to mention, he said he hasn't run into a single case of a Latin American young teenager or adolescent from the middle, lower, or poor classes who's cut herself. But he says doctors and psychologists in Latin America are starting to see it in the helicopter schools. And why wouldn't they? In those helicopter schools, the kids are all extreme gringo and gringo wannabes, and they all speak English. So they're all hooked into and obsessed with American social media. So anyway, I ran into this doc looking to get started with his own plan B in Latin America. He told me he was thinking of Chile, spend a couple of months there. But along the way, he met a few Chilean friends from the middle and upper classes that were trying to get the hell out of there. He couldn't understand it because he was trying to get in. And these were educated Chileans, not your average Chilean selling lunch on the street. At first, he didn't understand it until they explained to him in their broken English. They said the country's had recent elections and it's turned mano dura socialist. That's almost communist. Now, the words mano dura mean rule with a strong hand or strong fist in English. That's a typical law and order campaign slogan. Occasionally, in every Latin American country, a law and order party will pop up called la mano dura. Could be leftist, could be right. Meaning they're for strong and tough law and order. But what it also can often mean is loss of human rights inching towards a police state. Like, for example, in Nicaragua, where Ortega, the president, has jailed a number of reporters who write articles against him and has closed certain opposition newspapers. On the surface, it sounds good, like they're going to get tough, shape up the cops and crack down on crime and all that. But you see, the mano dura approach to political rule is what they've got in Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. And that mano dura, as good as it sounds, usually ends up cracking down and eliminating the rights of the average citizen. Also, eliminating the opposition. Yes, Chile has voted in a socialist government. And they've made diplomatic ties with Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela. And you know where that leads. So anyway, the business class, the businessmen that is that are not connected to government, you know, the ones that are not tied into government contracts. The independent businessmen in Chile are running scared of their own government. Many of them are looking to get out. So for that and many other reasons, I've crossed Chile off my list of Plan B destinations. It's a nice place to visit if you got dough, because it is high cost of living for Latin America. But I wouldn't want to live there. By the way, I've been getting tons of emails lately from people from Canada. They want to get the hell out of there in the worst way. Especially with the lockdowns, the forced vaccinations, and what happened with the truckers. And how the government locked them out of their own bank accounts. So anyway, since all that, I've been getting a flood of emails from Canadians wishing to get the hell out of Dodge. Like this one from Mr. D. And I'll paraphrase just a little bit. He says, "Hello from Canada. I just stumbled across your podcast today and I'm blown away after 4 episodes so far. What a breath of fresh air. Light, lively, funny, informative glimpse into the real expat life living in Latin America. I'm a 57-year-old retired and divorced father of 3 boys, and my youngest son will be out of high school around this time next year, at which time I want to get the hell out of Dodge and get my Plan B going for my next move in life. I've been spending countless hours over the past few months researching alternative passports, moving my finances out of Canada, etc., and investigating multiple countries and their styles of living. Trying to check out and target the best Latin American countries to try. I've been talking to tax lawyers, passport consultants, etc. too. In your episodes, Johnny, you mentioned that you help formulate plans and strategies for escaping expats who want to head to Latin America. You can sign me up. How do you go about working with interested people anyway? You also note that you have a conference coming up. I'd like to hear about that too. Is that in person or virtual? Now, due to my vaccine status here in Canada, Johnny, I'm still not allowed to travel outside the country. But I suspect they won't be able to keep up that charade for much longer. Thanks in advance," he says. Signed, Mr. D. All right, Mr. D, thanks for that. And it looks like we're going to be doing a one-on-one consult call real soon, and I'll get back to you on that. By the way, it sounds like you're really quite well prepared. A lot of people aren't, you know. They've got the right idea to get the hell out of Dodge, but they just don't know which steps to take. I'll be in touch. By the way, my seminar, my conference, is live. It's not virtual. All right, so that's just one example of many. Those mild-mannered Canadians are finally getting pissed off enough to get the hell out of Dodge. Oh, and by the way, in my recent travels, I ended up at a bar, restaurant, disco kind of place, sitting out in the smoking area, since someone was nice enough to give me a Cuban cigar. You know, you meet the most interesting people in the smoking areas because, well, everyone there's got something in common, the same vice. And sometimes the same 2 vices, smoking and drinking. And believe it or not, I ran into 4 ladies from the Ukraine who were working on a cruise ship, and 3 ladies from Kazakhstan, you know, one of those stand countries. It was the first time I ever got to sit down and talk to anyone from a stan country. That's Kazakhstan. It's a country that happens to have a border with both Russia and China, the largest landlocked country in the world that's about twice as big as Alaska. Now, you might wonder why a group of Kazakhstan women are speaking Spanish. Well, they weren't. They were barely speaking English. Actually, the youngest daughter, she was 21, spoke pretty good English. That's because the mother of the two girls was in the real estate business, looking to invest in Latin America. And you know why? Because it's calm and not at all a military hotspot like where they come from. Sheesh, imagine being in a country stuck between Russia and China. Anyway, obviously, the family had dough. And thus, we had a very interesting discussion about Putin and Zelensky. China, too. Now, all four of those Kazakhstan ladies were completely on the side of Ukraine, even though they've got borders with Russia and China. And the Stan lady, the mother, the real estate queen, told me and, well, all of us, standing there, no pun intended, that although Putin might be the biggest psychopathic jerk on the planet right now, probably the richest too, she said the sainted President Zelensky of Ukraine has, if you look it up on your search engine, preferably not the one that begins with a G, just type in Zelensky's net worth and you'll find he's worth $800 million. And according to this Stanish real estate lady, he's got a $14 million house in, guess where? My jammy. How'd that happen? I bet if you dug deep enough, you'd find Putin owns one or more there too. After all, he's supposed to be, unofficially, the richest guy in the world. So what do you do with all that dough? And even the four ladies from Ukraine said that although they love their country, they hate their government. Isn't that familiar? Of course, they hate Putin and they're absolutely against what Russia is doing to him. But they agreed their political system and their president and all their leaders are totally corrupt. The question is, how does a guy, Zelensky, remember, was a TV clown and entertainer? That was his job, his career, before he became president. How does he amass $800 million? Look it up. I did. It's true. Then, of course, you've got the Clintons worth over $100 million and the Obamas close to that. And you know Clinton's roots. He was a pole boy from Arkansas. In fact, being from Illinois, I remember when Obama was state senator, he was making $147,000 a year. You know, in every race, they'd print the tax returns of the participants. And now he's worth tens of millions. Check it out. They're just all sociopathic, maggotist pusballs. I mean all politicians on the state and federal level. I don't mean the dog catchers, sheriffs, and guys at the local level. I'm saying 99% of the state and federal guys are dyed-in-the-wool, backstabbing, lying, pustulant carbuckles. Again, I mean that in the kindest, most Christian sort of way. So anyway, what I got out of that conversation from those ladies from Kazakhstan and those four ladies from the Ukraine was that they absolutely hate and despise Putin and the Russians. They had absolutely no right to invade. Sure, Putin's guilty of terrible war crimes. But Zelensky's no hero. He's no Ukrainian George Washington, like the media paints him. He's just a thieving scumbag politician, too. All right, now an email from an expat lady named Carrie, who's living in Antigua, Guatemala. She says, Dear Johnny, I got my plan B going and landed in Guatemala about 3.5 years ago. I landed in Guatemala after a detour through Costa Rica and Panama. Two countries I found I didn't like so much. Like you say, Johnny, too many gringos and way too expensive. As you might imagine, being a single woman, I did take sort of a low-key, continuous amount of heat from my family after I made the decision and was preparing to leave. I'm 46 and my two kids are out of school. They've got their own lives up in the States, so I didn't have any kid baggage. They get it. I've talked to them about it extensively. They see what I'm doing. However, the rest of my extended family, my brothers, sisters, mother and dad, they thought moving to Latin America was a bit extreme, especially for a single lady. And all that happened before COVID and the lockdowns. Though, I did have an ace in the hole. I speak passable Spanish. It took 3 years in high school and college. And now that COVID accelerated and set the stage for so many of the seemingly far-out predicted things about state control and woke America, and now that the cultural and social breakdown is well underway, suddenly, me leaving the United States doesn't seem so far out at all. I'm more like the Pied Piper. And my relatives are wondering how I got so smart. Though I told you so's give me no satisfaction. In my spare time, and I've got a lot of spare time now that I'm in Latin America, I put together a little list of 10 reasons why I believe 95% of Americans, and that includes Canadians too, will never become expats, no matter how bad things get. Of course, there's always the usual reasons. The job, the family, kids still in school. All good excuses, but they're not on my list. Funny too, even the Americans on vacation I meet. I'm in Antigua, Guatemala. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, so we have our share of tourists coming in daily. When they find out I'm living here and see how great my life is, they say sincerely that's exactly what they want to do. But that's just what they say in the moment. 95% of them never will. I remember that feeling myself when I was in my 20s. I visited the Cayman Islands, Tulum, Bahamas, Costa Rica, and Puerto Vallarta. And each time when I was about to leave for back home, I told myself, I'm going to come back and live here. And then a couple of months go by, you're back at work doing the same old, and it's out of sight, out of mind. So much for flights of fancy. Thank God I was able to make the leap once my kids were out of the house. But it was only because my Spanish was good enough that I had the confidence to follow through. Otherwise, I don't think I would have tried it. I wouldn't have had the nerve. Enough about that. Here are my 10 reasons why I believe 95% of Americans won't ever become expats. In no particular order, number one, Americans care way too much about what other people think. And if you express interest in leaving the country, they'll tell you you're nuts. You're unpatriotic. You're abandoning your roots. They'll give you all kinds of reasons why it's a bad idea, especially if you're a woman. They'll say, why in the world would you want to leave when the rest of the world all wants to get in? Number two, Americans think the government and politicians are smarter than they are. They must be, since they're in charge, right? And even if they make lots of mistakes, they know more than we do. Number three, 95% of Americans don't believe enough in themselves to make the move. That connects with number four. Americans think they need the government or some kind of higher power to survive. Number five, Americans don't like experimenting with different ideas or things. They prefer to be told what to do and how to do it. Americans used to be problem solvers. They liked a challenge, but not anymore. Number six, Americans aren't healthy. And when they get sick, they do believe that America has the best health care in the world, so they better stick around when those health care crises creep up. Number seven, Americans are negatively influenced regarding Latin America by the marketing ad guys and fake news they see on TV. They give too much undeserved credibility to those woke online influencers. Number eight, Americans wish for things while just sitting on their butts instead of making a plan and working towards it. It's all right to dream while you're sleeping, but when you're awake, you need to get off your butt and have a plan. And that's no longer the American way. Number nine, Americans chase meaningless relationships and hang with people who don't help them grow mentally or psychologically. Number 10, Americans waste energy and countless hundreds of hours on mindless YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and Netflix shows. Oh, and Johnny, there are two more points for special credit. Number 11, Americans think they'll always be number one. And number 12, they think karma exists and bad people will get theirs in the end. Get their so-called just desserts. And that points to the fact that 95% of Americans think whatever bad things are happening in the USA now, they'll work themselves out. After all, we got through the Civil War, numerous depressions, World Wars I and II, the Cold War with Russia, the Cuban Missile Crisis, the assassination of Kennedy, the oil crisis of the 70s, 9/11, the dot-com bubble, the 2008 real estate and banking crash, and now COVID. They think somehow Americans are God's chosen people. Anyway, Johnny, you could read this or parts of it on the air if you like. We'll keep listening as always. Signed, Carrie. Not my real name. There's a P.S. She says, tell the folks out there, the more Spanish they learn, the lower their cost of living. Boy, is she right. When I first got down to Latin America, my first 5 years down, I was a total Spanish dunce. I really did pay a bit more than I had to for most things. After all, if you're in the big market buying food, vegetables, or whatever, no matter how many people are standing around negotiating, haggling, bickering back and forth about prices, if you know just a little bit of Spanish, at least you'll find out what other people are paying for this stuff, so you'll get an idea of what you should be paying. So what Carrie says, not her real name, is worth repeating. It's a cardinal rule. The more Spanish you learn, the lower your cost of living. Isn't that one of the main reasons we're down here? All right, now an email from Lewis. He says, Johnny, I've listened to your show for a couple of years now. I've been to a couple cities in Mexico, the usual suspects, Cancun, Playa del Carmen, Tulum. And if, from what you say, those are the most developed, gringoized, touristy areas, I'm still quite disappointed. In the infrastructure, that is. The bathrooms and the stores, restaurants, and homes are substandard, often really dirty and messy. You'll be walking around in a supposedly decent, even nice section of town. You'll walk across the street and have to pass over a gutter where there's ugly, brownish-grayish water flowing by. You certainly don't want to slip and step in that toxic soup. Not only does it stink, it would likely eat the soles off your feet. The question is, where does that stuff end up? What's it draining into? What's its final destination? I fear the rivers, the lakes, and the oceans. It's something you just don't want to think about. And even in the nicer neighborhoods, you see people throw garbage everywhere. And out in the county, in the boonies, every so often you see an ad hoc garbage dump. Certainly not sanctioned or legal. And the bigger the dump, the more quantities of waste and junk, the bigger the obvious no dumping sign. In Spanish, of course. But what for? No one pays attention. Nobody cares. I don't know, Johnny. You talk about Latin America being the next best thing to paradise. I'm not saying they're not absolutely spectacular places, but the people, they just don't seem to appreciate or know how to take care of what they've got. I'll tell you, when I was in Cancun recently, again, one of the most developed areas in all of Mexico, probably all of Latin America, if you go a little bit off the main drag where the public beaches are, away from the main hotels and resorts, there's garbage everywhere. Now the big hotels and resorts have a protocol for that. They've got people cleaning up the beaches, even raking the sand, making it beautiful and nice. They've really got it down. In fact, you can see right outside in front of the First World Gringo Hotels, three separate cans for recycling garbage. One for paper, one for metal and cans, and one for plastic. You see the same thing in parking lots where nice cars park. Makes you feel good. Makes you feel things are progressing. Till you jump in a taxi and you're in the next barrio that's only about just 4 or 5 blocks away. You pull up to a stoplight and there's a man-sized pile of garbage in the empty lot with an old lady and a kid or two picking through it. Then he says, I don't know, Johnny. I don't know what it is about the Latin culture. Seems they've never learned the basic lessons of hygiene. There are plenty of good examples out there, but they just don't learn. All the first world franchise companies like McDonald's and Burger King, their bathrooms and parking lots are all clean. Big hotels are very clean too. I just don't see why local Latinos don't absorb that by example. I know you're well aware of it, because you talk about Montezuma's revenge on occasion, warning us listeners not to eat the street food, no matter how good it looks or smells. So Johnny, that's my main criticism about Latin America. My main gripe. I can take mañana time, I can take standing in lines, I can handle bad drivers and crooked cops, but I can't be silent about the way Latin Americans pollute and litter. What's it going to take and how long is it going to take to get them on board? Will they ever get with the program? Though I have to admit, as far as litter and pollution, the border towns are much worse. They're complete disasters. Have you ever driven to Tijuana? So Johnny, there's my 2 cents, and I guess if I come down to live in Latin America permanently, if I can afford it, I'll be living in one of those gated, guarded communities. They all seem to be pretty nice and have gardeners, maintenance guys, regular garbage pickup, lawn services. They do have standards. Then he closes out saying, good shows lately, Johnny. Keep it up. Signed, Chet from Las Vegas. Hey, Chet, I've got 2 words for you. Picky, picky. Listen, Chet, you know, everywhere you go here in Latin America, you see backpackers from the States, Canada, Europe, and they all travel around on the cheap, living in communal spaces, 10 guys to a bathroom, eating street food and at the very cheapest Chinese restaurants. These guys do not win any hygiene awards. Greasy hair, B.O., wearing the same underwear for a week? Talk about lowering your first world standards, huh? Though I'm with you, Chet, 100% on the way Latins indiscriminately pollute and litter. Though they are getting better by drips and drabs. You longtime listeners have heard me tell the story of when I first went down to Costa Rica and got on one of the chicken buses. There was a big sign up by the driver that said, don't throw your garbage on the floor, throw it out the window. I am not kidding you. And about those polluted rivers, beaches, and gutters full of stinky, poisonous-looking water you see on occasion when you're just walking around. That stuff really is disgusting. And you're not the only one complaining, Chet. Many tourists and visitors lament the pollution and trash they see everywhere. But lots of older gringos remember how the pollution was in the U.S. back in the 70s and 80s. So they cut the Latinos some slack. There were toxic rivers catching fire. Yep, whole rivers catching fire in the USA. I remember living up by Lake Michigan. There used to be a warning every week or so in the Chicago Trib telling the public not to eat more than 1 Chinook salmon meal a month because those fish were so loaded with mercury. So basically, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, the U.S. pollution was out of control. Look how many years it took for them to take lead out of gasoline. In fact, according to the New Scientist magazine, Exposure to leaded gas as a child in the U.S. has been linked to an average IQ drop of 2.6 points among U.S. adults and 5.9 points among those kids born in the mid to late 1960s. According to a Duke University study, more than half of the people in the U.S. have slightly lower IQs as a result of inhaling exhaust gas from those vehicles. You older guys and gals might remember on the gas pump there was always a sticker that said, "Contains tetraethyl lead." You know, cars with bigger engines or high-performance engines that needed to run on high-octane gas, you know, super, they got that high-octane or super gas by adding lead, tetraethyl lead. So if you were a kid growing up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s in the States, or in fact anywhere, and you lived next to a big road or superhighway, duh, you've been dumbed down. Maybe ever so slightly, but you've been dumbed down. Hey, wait a minute, that's me. Makes you wonder how often Biden sucked on a tailpipe in his early years. I said tailpipe, not crack pipe. That was his kid, Hunter. Anyway, Chet, the good news is that when a new builder or developer sends in his plans for a new project, we're talking Latin America now, they too must do environmental impact studies. So little by little, as old housing and development projects go by the wayside, new ones replace them. The drainage and sewage processing will be ratcheted up to first world standards. Though as far as the polluters and litterers on public beaches and everywhere else in the pueblos and out in the boonies, that's only going to have a meaningful change when the cops actually start fining people for littering. That's what did it up in the States, you know. If you get a $50, $100, or even $200 fine for littering, man, that'll be the last time you throw a McDonald's wrapper on the ground. As for now, the change I've seen is that upper middle class and wealthy Latinos no longer seem to litter like they used to. Though you still see the occasional Lexus or Range Rover pull over and a guy gets out and takes a whiz right on the side of the road without even walking into the bushes. I guess that'll never change, but I rarely see him toss litter out the window like they used to. However, the middle and lower middle classes still have those very bad habits. Often I'll be right behind a chicken bus and I'll see someone throw out a Coke can, Cheetos wrapper, or a paper coffee cup, and no one even scolds him. You know, that's the other thing. One good scolding can often embarrass a person enough so that he'll never do it again. By the way, I'm doing my part to save the earth, too. I'm a militant paper straw user. And to that effect, I'm waiting for my autographed Save the Planet participation trophy from Greta and Klaus Schwab. By the way, expat Eddie says some of his old buddies who are still snorting coke have switched to paper straws.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.